A King County judge ruled in favor of the Seattle Police Department subpoena. They've been looking for images and video of arson and theft during the May 30th riot in downtown Seattle. Images that outlets refused to turn over, citing press independence. Now, the Seattle Times appears to be leading the charge against this decision by a King County judge, though every local TV station is part of the subpoena as well. Patty Gallagher Newberry is the national president for the Society of Professional Journalists. They have a chapter here in Washington State, and she says she backs the arguments made by the Seattle Times. She joins me now. Welcome to the show, Patty.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So the arguments that I've seen from the Times come from their executive editor, Michelle Flores, and she said she believes this decision, quote, puts our independence and even our staff's physical safety at risk. So those are obviously two big issues. Let's start just on the independent front. How would media be less independent by turning over evidence of a crime or what the police suspect could be evidence of a crime?
Well, essentially what the police there are asking the local media players to do is assist them in a criminal investigation, right? Apparently they launched their own investigation about the stolen gun and the damaged police vehicles of their own and came up empty in some regard, right? And so now are turning to media to help them, bring their investigation to a close. And so journalists are independent. They are independent from police investigatory procedures. Journalists are not part of the police machine. Police operate in their sphere. Journalists operate mm-hmm. in their sphere. And journalism has never existed to assist law enforcement in bringing their investigations to a close. So it's really quite unusual for the police department to be seeking these materials from local journalists to help them solve a crime. So that's the first thing. The independence is, in fact, compromised if the media organizations are compelled to turn over video or digital images.
Would it be compromised if they did it on their own and not compelled? Because obviously they could say, look, this we didn't choose to do this. The judge, the Washington state law allows for something like this to happen. We don't agree with this decision, but our hands are tied versus handing over information because they literally see some folks maybe in some of the images breaking the law.
I guess they could. They could choose to do that, but again, that would be highly unusual outside the usual practice.
That's my point. Is that, when you're being compelled by law, I think you can very easily step back and say that we didn't choose to do this. Our hands are tied. So they weren't necessarily mm-hmm. participating.
Right. But I can't see any compelling argument that would induce or inspire the Seattle paper or the television stations to turn over those materials. I mean, what would the gain be for them? That they are good citizens helping the police, crack down on crime? Well, that's not what journalism is about. Journalism is about gathering materials, reporting stories, presenting mm-hmm. them to an audience, not about helping nab bad guy.
I disagree with that a little bit, right? When we have a Amber Alert, for example, that goes out, we publish the Amber Alert.
Sure.
We do that in concert with local law enforcement officials because we are trying to nab the bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So why is that any different?
Analogy. I think it's because the initial genesis of Amber Alerts started differently, right? It was a joint project from the beginning that media would assist in that way with, for the public good. This is coming, I guess, after the fact makes it different, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just, again, it's outside the usual protocols, and so it feels different in that regard.
The court part does.
I see the point.
Yeah.
I see the point you're making. If media is willing to help with Amber Alerts to, identify vehicles of persons who might be involved in criminal activity or otherwise.
And even beyond that, right? The idea that maybe there's a manhunt going on and we've got the information as to a criminal who's armed and dangerous and they're out in the in our communities. And so, you know, on air, we would certainly give the information about the suspect, online, on TV, in the New York, in the Seattle Times. They would do exactly the same thing. In this case, I mean, I would make the argument it's exactly the same. We've got stolen weapons that, you know, they very clearly were stolen. And if there's any information that could be provided that could help law enforcement, I guess I don't know, other than the court part in this, and I agree with you, that is obviously not the norm where a subpoena is filed. But in this case, they're filing the subpoena because, to your point, they're not just going to hand over the information that is sought in this investigation.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I think, again, the Amber Alert comparison is interesting analogy, but the intent of that program, it was, you know, that program was created with joint partnership in mind and so forth. And again, your example of media being willing to publish that a criminal is at large or police are seeking more information, call the Crime Stoppers number published here if you have information. Those things are working with, collaborating with law enforcement. Why does this seem different is really kind of the core issue. And I think it is because there is a subpoena. It's being turned into a compulsory compliance, not a voluntary compliance. But I don't really, I can't think of a lot of reasons why journalists would comply voluntarily with turning over their reporting materials. So I think that's a distinction, right? It's their it's what they have gathered in their reporting. It's proprietary to them, the journalists, them, the news organization. That's a little bit different than agreeing to publicize the Amber Alert or the Crime Stoppers number in coverage, right? That I think that's the difference there. It's gathered reporting material, proprietary, owned by, right? And in these cases, you know, one of the compelling questions for me is always, if journalists have that material, you know, why couldn't law enforcement have, why can't they turn it up on their own, right? What's not happening at their end that precludes them, prevents them from, right? Do they not have surveillance at the scene?
They don't.
Do they not have the, they don't, I mean, it's,
I mean,
that, the
that's what,
that, that
that's,
they,
that's what they're saying, right? I mean, so under the Washington State Shield Law, what you basically have to do is make sure that you're going through every avenue that you can possibly go through before even contemplating going and trying to collect this information from the Seattle Times and Como King, all these stations. And so according to the judge, seemed to agree that, yeah, they did everything they could do. They looked at all the surveillance video that they could. There's no, you know, maybe when you turn over the information, they're not going to be able to find anything. But I do, I think you and I agree that this, while you may not agree with the way they're doing it, the SPD doesn't have any nefarious intent in this, correct?
I would guess. I mean, I don't know their intent, but
well, let's see, there's no evidence to suggest that it's nefarious, I should say.
I would say that, you know, a police department would probably say, we are not trying to stomp on press rights here. We're trying to solve a crime. And yes, under the Shield Law, you know, they are presenting to a judge that they have run out of options, that they have overturned, you know, they have turned up all the rocks and they've still not found the evidence they need to move forward with, you know, with an arrest or what have you. And that, you know, Shield Laws are designed to push an agency to the nth degree, meaning they have not, you know, they have exhausted all possibilities. So apparently that's what the judge agreed with here, and therefore why the subpoenas are in place.
We only have about a couple minutes left. By the way, if you're just joining us, I'm talking with Patty Newberry. She's the national president for the Society of Professional Journalists. The only other point that the Seattle Times editor made that I wanted to discuss is this idea that if you were to turn over this information, it could potentially put the staff's physical safety at risk. Of the two arguments that they make, that one seems the least moving to me, in the sense that we've already, I don't think this changes anything with the criminal element that's out there who are protesting. I think that you're going to have, regardless, you're always going to have some level of discontent coming from some folks in this particular crowd, since they harass and assault journalists who film things that they don't want them to film. But what's the argument that it puts physical safety at risk?
Yeah, I do think there is some legitimate, that's a legitimate argument that if it becomes known that the Seattle news organizations turned over video and pictures, you could get additional harassment at the scene of these kinds of news events. Hey, aren't you the guys who turned over everything to the police? You know, we're gonna go after you
yeah.
now.
I'm just arguing that happens now. That just happens now, at least in this circumstance, because we've seen certainly, and myself included, if I'm videotaping something because we have a news reason to videotape that person who's committing arson right now, they try to get in your face and they try to prevent you from filming because they know that as a member of the media, I'm of course going to promote that. I'm going to post that.
Right. Yeah. It's worth putting out there as an objection to the subpoena. Whether in the particulars there it makes journalists more vulnerable than they already are, I can't say. But it certainly doesn't give them any additional protection from agitated protesters who might, in fact, be breaking law.
Well, it's an interesting, I mean, as someone who works in the media, it's interesting because I don't necessarily like the idea of a subpoena in a case like this, but I'm certainly open to me being wrong on this because I understand that there's a public good that would be served here, but I hear your concerns. I hear the Seattle Times concerns. We've been talking with Patty Newberry. She's the president for the Society of Professional Journalists. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Happy to be with you.
Thank you. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, we dive into the big local with a trip to Painfield out of Everett. You're listening to KTTH.